Good morning, everybody. I'm very glad to do this little Codex talk this morning. But first, I want to thank Peter and Susan and the board of the Codex Foundation for giving me this opportunity. Hopefully, my English would be good enough to allow you to understand what I mean. As my wife, Françoise, is French, I'm switching easily between German and French, but I'm sorry that English is not a common language for me, so I will read. I've been unable to choose a spatial aspect of my work for this talk. You know, when you're getting older, it's inevitable to look back and to ask yourself how things get into work and life. Sorry if my talk takes a little touch of a personal story. Am I a book artist? I don't know. Sure, I have been making at least about 25 books alone and with others, but I did some typographical work, but I never have studied in a book arts program. I've been learning by doing. Since my childhood, I just have been dreaming to become an artist. I have made drawings and paintings. How did bookmaking get into my work and life? Things never come from nowhere. In a few lines, I will tell you my story and my evolution in this field. As an 11-year-old refugee from Eastern Germany, I used to live as an errand boy in a presbytery in Basel, Switzerland, and one of my jobs was to take the manuscripts and the proof of the community newsletter back and forth from the presbytery to the print shop. I was fascinated by the magic of printing and probably infected by the smell of the printing ink. This smell never left my nose, and the magic has remained in my mind. Later, as a Boy Scout in high school, then as an art student, and later when I've been in charge of a small family-owned company, when there was some job dealing with printing, I asked to get it. But I was never printing myself, with the exception of woodcuts and etchings in the art school in Paris. Things changed in the 70s when Françoise and I settled in Gutenberg City, Mainz, Germany. We became friends with some staff persons of the Gutenberg Museum, and we saw that they didn't absolutely not care of the technological revolution in the printing industry and the end of Gutenberg's letterpress printing beginning at that time. Constantly, the printers were calling the museum to take over their letterpress stuff. They needed the place for these enormous battered photosetting systems, which were the top at that time. The museum rejected the offers, saying, "We have no space." Same reply to one of the best German foundries, Stempel, in Frankfurt, which the owner of the linotype company decided to close. Finally, I asked them for the addresses, and I took over quite a lot for little money. Françoise had to push away the shelves with the jam and the preserve in our cellar, and I was entering types and all the other letterpress stuff for several years. I also get two proof presses, a big one, 1 meter by 70 centimeter, and another one 50 by 70 with height adjustable bed. I was spending more time collecting and organizing this stuff than doing my artwork. To be correct, I have to say that since that time, the Gutenberg Museum has changed. That now they have a big public print shop with a wide stock of types and presses. What should I do with all that letterpress equipment? First step, the presses have been suitable for the woodcuts. And the type equipment gave me the idea to make poster poems, we'll say, woodcuts with text and in unnumbered editions, 50 by 70 centimeter. They were very cheap. People unable to afford my original engravings and woodcuts could buy them. The political climate of this period of the Cold War encouraged this. We had a huge success with some politically committed authors as Erich Fried, for example. For A few years, the city of Mainz commissioned me to do poster poems for the advertising column. I have to mention the influence of a marvelous German artist named H.A.P. Grieshaber, who has made woodcut posters and books, but since this period, the social background has completely changed. Next step, at the Frankfurt Book Fair, I discovered some artists showing their limited edition books. In Mainz, also a biannual free small press fair has been held with subsidies from the city of Mainz. For a while, Françoise and I have been members of the board of this fair. We have organized book exhibitions, readings, discussions, and we were trying to establish a jury in order to transform this fair to be the first international fair for artist books and book research. Unfortunately, one city agent kicked us out in the 80s. He feared to lose the control. This fair still exists today with any demands on quality. Recently, the new director of the Gutenberg Museum asked me if there would be a chance to create an artist book fair now. Too late, my friend, I said. Now there's Codex. Through this, we have met a fantastic community, and bookmaking has become a prospect where I've been able to join the poetry to the visual arts and to bring together authors and artists across the borders. But what's the role of an artist in bookmaking? After the first poetry books I've printed, this question appeared more and more clearly. I'm neither a professional printer, nor a designer or illustrator. Where is the difference? The examples are given by history. There was a lot to discover, from the Irish Book of Kells of the 9th century to the 20th century Dadaist and the contemporary visual arts, visual poets, such as the German Franz Mohn, born 1976. In the following, I will describe some books I made and explain their conception. One of my aims has been to combine the freedom of the drawing spirit with the letterpress typography to make the letters dance and to use typography as a tool for an analytical approach to the text at the same time. At the beginning, in George Tarkle's famous poem Abendland, I isolated the keywords dealing with sensations and I tried to illustrate the mood of these words by using the individual style of types. I printed the words of each stanza in another color on tracing paper. This book with lithography by Robert Schwarz became our first bilingual book, German and French. This became De Pal's future. Some books have even three languages. The Artaud remains the most significant book where I was researching into the possibilities of drawing the text. The French actor and poet Antonin Artaud, who has been close to the surrealism environment, used to switch in his notebook writings from French to a personal language, neither French nor foreign tongue, a kind of musical sounds, expression of a mood. It's called glossolalie, the term given to this universal tongue described in the Bible as a Pentecost miracle. You might find analogous example of this kind of sound creation in the Ursonate by the German Kurt Schwitters or in the Zaum poetry by the French Georgian Iliast. It's a real pleasure for the typographer to set these texts as he has complete freedom in creating typographical shapes with no consideration for the legibility. There's nothing to read, but only to hear. I wanted to translate the sound into typographical shapes. The job on this book, as on all our books, is not limited to the setting of some text. For a year, Françoise and I were reading a lot of Artaud's text in view of a choice dealing with his troubles with language and human communication. Our choice should be read from the beginning to the end as a continuous text. We made the first translation into German. In this bilingual book, these two languages are unified in the same shape. The glossolali are appearing as a third untranslatable language. I didn't limit my freedom exclusively to the typography of the glossolali. I transformed the normal text, creating shapes with mixed types inspired by the content, playing with the space between the letters and the words. So I created another reading, new words, a stronger attention to the words. Doing this, I have been guided by the idea to give the most expressive character to the typography as a contrast to Robert Schwarz's geometrical style of lithography, which is working as a pedestal for Antonin Artaud. In the next books, I have explored a similar way of transforming poetry into typographical shapes. I would like to mention only one of them, Serge Pey's poems. The text of this French sound poet and performer, born 1950, have two complementary features, strong rhythm and strange images. In his readings, he is performing with music, instruments, bells, Indian rain sticks, he's stamping his food, and so on. He becomes breathless. She's like a shaman in trance. When one reads his poems normally set in an unjustified text, he can't get any idea of the multiple dimension of his poetry. So my aim has been to make visible the rhythm and the strangeness of the poetic images. Creating bilingual typographical shapes, I didn't care about the verse, but you can see little black blocks, types set upside down, as marks of the performer's stamps. This book has a title in French, The Horizon is a Bent Mouth. It was the first translation into German of this author, translated by myself. I also made the color woodcuts for this book. The slides I'm showing you let you see a principle which is guiding my bookmaking, the research in the double page. As I rarely have an established type area, I like to explore the variable possibilities of the neighborhood of two pages. Continuity, similarity, response, opposition, as strong as possible. All the books above are handset and letterpress printed. There have been two reasons for deciding to try the use of the computer and the scanner in our bookmaking: to be able to confront longer text and to print directly drawings and other artwork without using polymers. We don't like the spatial inkjet paper where the colors are too bright, but we didn't hesitate anymore since we found out that the new archival ink printers are working as well on Japanese paper as on Arches, an uncoated French cotton paper made for printing of engravings. With these machines, you are even able to print both sides keeping register. Besides this, we are thinking that it is a valid method to print an ink drawing with an inkjet printer. Nevertheless, I was feeling that I should introduce handmade elements in the books. In season one, text by the Lebanese-American Etel Adnan, born 1925, I combined my inkjet printed drawings on one side of a translucent Japanese paper with the woodcuts printed by hand on the other. Therefore, there is no certain image. When you turn over the pages, they are changing. The text is appearing through the Japanese paper. It might seem to be set at random. That's not true. Each page is different, but there is a very precise grid behind, and the same fonts are moving in a kind of circle from one stanza to the other, from one of the three languages, English, German, French, to the other. It's corresponding with the numerous layers of this fascinating text, changing from an everyday observation to a mythological matter from philosophical thinking to the celebration of California's beauty. Normally, all the artwork is made on a scale 1-to-1. For Night, the book we made for Ethel Adnan's 19th birthday, Françoise had a new idea. She blew up one of my ink drawings. We cut the enlarged drawing in 9 parts, matching with the size of the pages, and printed them by inkjet. With the enlargement 3 times, the black lines became very smooth. I assembled the parts again, and I made a woodcut of it, printed by hand with heavy black ink on Japanese paper. It's folded and inserted into the book as an appendix. The inkjet print has its own sensory, but it's not comparable with the woodcut printed by hand. I like to show the sensorial difference. I'm making woodcuts on very rough plywood. I like the grain, and I accept the little accidents happening during the work with the tools. So the woodcuts get its individual appearance. In my last book, Interference, with my own poems, I printed the color woodcuts directly over the inkjet printed drawings and the newspaper collage Françoise made for the end papers. I'm sorry, the poems are in German and French only. I'm still wanting a translator for the English version, if you know one. This book might be the best answer why I still make books, we'll say artist books. The reason is my passion for poetry and visual arts. That's my personal challenge too, as a poet, as a translator, and as an artist. When I made my first books, I discovered how intimately you live the text while setting it type by type. This emotion remains even when I'm setting it with InDesign. A few words about my artwork. As you see, my drawings and woodcuts are abstract. There are only a few exceptions. What's the matter? What do I tell? Nothing other than the tension when the bamboo pen filled with Indian ink is drawing the first line on a white paper, followed by other lines and curves, starting a dialogue among themselves. It is the mirror of the initial tension, vibration. It is part of breathing. The lines are creating a network, maybe an organic tissue. For me, the lines are like musical notes. They are working like a piece of music with its melodies, its harmonies and contrasts, and overall its dynamic, its rhythm. Nobody would ask you what the music is representing or describing. Nevertheless, it could happen that corporeal shapes are appearing. The observer may be free to associate it with that what he wants. But I want to avoid being locked in any interpretation outside of the aesthetic elements and the visual invention. I know that might seem to be la pour la, but it's not escapism. When I have made poster poems with political background, I understood that the message would touch only those who are thinking in the same direction. This kind of artwork is like a social ribbon in a community who is identifying with the message. This is okay, but it's no more my aim. Sure, towards recent political events, this kind of ribbon would be necessary again, but this, what we did once by printing, is done by social media and the internet today. The question is also, who gives a special role to an artist to be a preacher or a messenger? Artists as messengers or leaders could even be dangerous when they are serving ideological or political interests. History is plenty of bad examples. For me, the artist is not a privileged person. He's simply a human and a citizen like another, with the same rights and the same responsibilities. When the artist is protesting against injustice or inhumanity, he should do this as a citizen. In the new book, Interference, the printed end papers with Francoise's newspaper collage and the overlying woodcut are implying what I mean about the relationship between the outside world and the artist. The artist is an observer, but he has no better solutions to the problems of the world, and he can't reply to each scandal, catastrophe, or alternative fact. As a human and an artist, I'm living with my eyes and my ears wide open in front of the distress and the horrible things happening in the world, but also for the colors and the beauty of life. All these feelings and emotions enter in my poems and in my artwork, even when it's abstract. I need this labor for the health of my mind. It's a transcendental moment I can share through my work. It's possible to feel an ecstasy you are unable to find in the everyday life. More the social and political events are cruel and detestable, more all human beings need to be elevated by spiritual and aesthetic values. They need the tonic against melancholy given by the arts, and the creativity against the spirit of death and destruction. I want to be a contributor to this. I wouldn't finish this talk without my special thanks to Françoise. Without her, I wouldn't be able to make all these books. She is the critic, the translator into French, the photographer, she is a specialist of all the computer things, and she is my beloved wife. Thank you.